Apologetics, Matt Slick Live. Matt is the founder and president of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, found online at carm.org. When you have questions about Bible doctrines, turn to Matt Slick Live for answers, taking your calls, and responding to your questions at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. May the Lord bless you in the hearing and hopefully in the preaching and teaching of His Word. If you want to give me a call, all you got to do is dial 877-207-2276. Same as always, just give me a call. We have five open lines right now. So often what happens is people start calling in the latter half of the show because I guess they're getting off work and traveling, whatever, getting home. Oh, yeah, but if you want to give me a call, please do. Now, we get calls from all over the world, and I've been doing radio for 15 years, 5 days a week, and enjoying it. Had a lot of good times, and you know, I just want to thank you, all of you, who are supporting us, who like the show, and you know, may the Lord just bless you, and just bless us in this. Like I said, five open lines, give me a call, 877-207-2276. So, let me see. I was thinking about doing something really a bit different today, since, you know, what I'll often do is just pick a topic to teach on. And when there's nobody calling, I want to talk about government a little bit. I've been doing some research, and what I do when I do my research projects is I create outlines. And I do them because I can, on my Word program, my large monitors, I can put in certain links. I can see things instantly, and it helps me with all kinds of information and all kinds of stuff. We've been hearing a lot about socialism and the Socialist Democratic Party, things like that. Let me tell you what socialism is. And you have to understand, this is really important. It's really significant. Socialism is a political, social system in which private property and the distribution of income are subject to the social and centralized governmental control. What that means is that the means of production, even certain areas of ownership of property and businesses, are to be controlled by the governmental systems. So it means that government then becomes the mother and the father. It becomes the controller of everything. This is what socialism is, and it is wrought with all kinds of problems. Socialism is the issue of redistribution of resources, redistribution of wealth, redistribution of things. It's a form of communism. And it's where the government owns production and distribution, and the government decides what's best for the majority of the people, which means that the minority of the people can be overlooked, and their rights can be, let's just say, wiped out. Now, democratic socialism is what these people are on TV are espousing, and that is, it's a form of social control, governmental control, with a limited state power, where the democratically elected officials will regulate the production and distribution of wealth. In other words, it's a form of socialism, except that it's supposed to be democratically elected people. Well, what happens to people when they get in control? They want more power. We see this this kind of debacle happening in politics today. Now, just so you know, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm a constitutionalist. I believe in the Constitution. I think it needs to be upheld, and that's my position. But nevertheless, I'm going to give you an illustration of what socialism does, and we'll get the callers coming in here a little bit, but let's just say that there are 30 students in a classroom. 10 of the students work very hard, and they get A's. So 10 out of 30 get A's. 10 of the students just don't work that hard, and they get C's. 10 of the students don't work at all, and they get F's. So we have 30 people, and a third work hard, they get A's. A third don't work hard, they get C's. A third don't work at all, they get F's. In a socialistic system, the redistribution of attributes, the redistribution of the wealth, the redistribution of power for the overall good. So what the socialist teacher decides to do is average all the grades for the benefit of the whole. And so he says everybody will just average them out and everybody will get a C. The people who are getting Fs like this because they don't have to do anything and they benefit. Are they going to be motivated to work harder? Of course not. Because people who do work hard are going to be sacrificing their hard work for the sake of those who don't work hard. This is socialism. Those who get A's in the class, those who work very hard, they are not going to want to work hard because they're not rewarded in a manner consistent with their hard work. And so they work even less. The people who are getting C's, well, they're thinking, well, I don't have to do much of anything. So they might just still get C's. Well, the people who are doing A work are going to now start doing a lot less. The overall GPA just decreases. The overall product decreases. The overall quality of the education decreases. Now, this is just an illustration of what socialism is, and it is with a redistribution of the commodities, a redistribution of wealth, a redistribution of stuff. And it's taking from those who work hard and giving to those who don't work hard. It's punishing those who work hard and not punishing, rewarding those who don't work hard at all. And so this has a deleterious effect on the economy. What it happens is things get bad. People don't want to work. Production slows. The economy then becomes less productive. Because it becomes less productive, the government then tries to pass more laws and regulate production and taxation and production, distribution of things in order to get the economy to stay healthy. But this demotivates people because now more regulations are coming in telling them what to do. In Venezuela, just so you know, 1992, it was the third richest country in the hemisphere in 1992. In 1998, Hugo Chavez was elected president, and he brought in a new constitution with socialist policies, socialist ideas. I'm going to tell you what they were. In 2001, Chavez passed laws aimed at the redistribution of land and wealth. In 2004, private health care was completely socialized. So health care issues were completely socialized. In 2005, stiff fines and prison terms were imposed upon those in the media who criticized the leaders. In 2006, Chavez shifted, this is in Venezuela, shifted buying military equipment from the United States and started getting it from Russia. In 2007, all higher education became free. In 2009, the socialists banned the private ownership of guns. Now check this out. The socialist regime, Hugo Chavez, in Venezuela, removed the private care, health care, and socialized it. In other words, made it government run. So that's socialist. Anyway, that's what they did. Higher education was to be free, and they took away people's guns. In 2012, Bernie Sanders said that the Venezuelan economy, government, was the American dream. This is what Bernie Sanders said in 2012. You can get this from the BBC. No, that's a different thing. Anyway, let me get back to my notes. So in 2007, Chavez announced that key energy and telecommunications companies would be nationalized. So in other words, the government just take over more and more. This is what happens in socialization, is that the government takes over more and more power because things aren't working efficiently. Why are they not working efficiently? Because the individual who is responsible for his own property, his own business, to run it the way he sees fit or she sees fit, is the best person in that position to know what's best and work the most efficiently for his benefit and the benefit of his family and to increase production. In a socialist system, that is removed. And so the will to move and to work is lessened. The government comes in and imposes strict regulations of what can and cannot be done. You cannot run that efficiently in an economy. It doesn't work very well at all. So, in 2009, the voters approved a plan to abolish term limits. That meant that the people in power could stay in power. In 2012, government enforces police control on basic goods. And this was to battle inflation. In 2014, opposition leaders were imprisoned. In 2016, there were food and health care shortages that became widespread. From 2014 to 2018, 2 million people left Venezuela and fled to neighboring countries. So, in 2017, the constitution and elections were suspended. And as you know, Venezuela is doing very, very, very badly. This is what socialism brought to them. These people who want socialism, in my opinion, are liars and hypocrites, those political leaders, because they swear to uphold the Constitution, and then they work against the Constitution by instituting socialistic ideas when the Constitution does not allow that. The three branches of government are meant to prevent the government from getting too much power. And so we do not want the government to have power. The government is supposed to be minimalized. It's supposed to have minimal responsibility. Now, we're a democracy, but we're not really a democracy. We're a republic. Let me explain the difference. In a democracy, it's majority rules. So if the majority votes for something, then it doesn't matter what the minorities think. In a republic, the majority cannot remove constitutional rights. We're a republic, a democratic republic, because we have a constitution and the Bill of Rights. And we have to understand that in making the laws in a democracy, the majority just simply make laws. And they can override the rights of any other people. But in a republic, the elected representatives do this. And we have to understand, folks, that when people get in power, they want more power. They will do what is necessary to ensure their own power and security. This has happened time and time again throughout history. And governments fail because of it. Rebellions happen. Revolutions happen because of it. This is history. So I'm just telling people that, I'm trying to warn people against the rise of socialism. It's bad news. It's not good. I would suggest anybody listening, if you're a socialist, you like this stuff, go study history. Go study Venezuela. Just go do a Google search on Venezuela and see what socialistic principles got in and how the constitution there was suspended, how they had free education, they had free health care, and how gun ownership was removed. Exactly the same thing that the Socialist Party here are trying to institute. And we've already seen this happen in real time, within our lifetime, and it's failed, and Venezuelan government just went down. And other governments that have socialistic principles have done the same thing. Anyway, I'm just letting you know, okay? I study everything. We'll talk about everything. So, me, I vote constitutionally. I vote for the Constitutionalist Party. That's what I vote for. That's what I do. So there you go. Hey, there's a break. We have three open lines, 877-207-2276. You want to give me a call? Give me a call, 877-207-2276. Be right back.
It's Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
Everybody, welcome back to the show. Let's get to Christine from Tucson, Arizona. Christine, welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, I have a question about 1 Corinthians 5, 9 through 11, especially in relation to how cults perceive this. And I know they'll just cherry pick a couple of verses and hone in on a couple of words here. So we can easily see it's not in the context of the whole chapter. Mm-hmm. Especially in verse 9, they'll hone in on don't associate with as don't talk to. and verse 11, not even to eat with such a one. So I was wondering if you could expound on that.
The idea of 1 Corinthians 5 is in the context of the rebuking of immorality. And in the beginning of that chapter, there is a man who is having relations, improper relations with his father's wife. And this kind of immorality is the context of what's being spoken of. Grotesque immorality. Have nothing to do with them. Avoid them. The immoral people. And the word immoral there is pornos. So it's talking about the sexually immoral people. It's not talking about my brother becomes a Mormon and I don't associate with him anymore. Okay,
yeah.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And so what the cults
do is misuse
it.
What about associate, that word associate? Would you take that as like talking to, or more in the context of Christian fellowship? Like, don't accept them as you're having Christian fellowship with them in the context of the congregation or the church, right?
Yeah, not to associate with immoral people. Don't have anything to do with those wicked people like that. Steer clear of them.
But when they're in the congregation, when they're claiming to be Christians, because then it says, don't judge outsiders later.
Well, if they're in the congregation, it says, I did not mean with all immoral people. That's what it says. I did not mean that all, at all. Okay, let me try it again. I did not at all mean with the immoral people of this world or with the covetous and swindlers or idolaters. For then you'd have to go out of the world. But actually I wrote to you not to associate with any so-called brother if he's an immoral person or covetous or idolater or violer or drunkard or swindler or even to eat with such a one. Eating meant you approved of their fellowship, you approved of them. It doesn't have the same import and the same emphasis as it does in our culture. So so-called brother, that means someone's living as a hypocrite. They are calling themselves a Christian, but they are immoral, and there's that word, pornos, again. They're covetous, they're idolaters, they're revilers, they're drunkards, swindlers. They're not regenerate. That's not the behavior of regenerate. So what they're doing is they're pretending to be Christian, and they are they're living in a very ungodly way. So don't associate with them. You distance yourself from them.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild how they can extrapolate this to mean anybody who leaves the watchtower. I mean, it doesn't have anything to, you know, basically then they should be considered an outsider, right? If they have left the watchtower, they wouldn't even be considering themselves a Jehovah Witness. And then I have one more question about that, if that's okay, real quick.
Sure.
Do you think, as far as in the church today, as far as this chapter, do you think we've swung, I mean, to the opposite extreme of, like, cults? I mean, people constantly seem to, even though they're Christians, like, they're almost glory in their tolerance, like what it's talking about in the beginning of the chapter. Parents that have children openly checking up and all kinds of things like that, they continue to talk to them like they're Christians.
It's a difficult thing because what do you do when you have a child who's not a believer? I have a daughter, and it's well known. And that she's definitely not a believer. Well, I still love her. She's still welcome over here.
Oh, of course. Yeah, yeah. But I'm talking about just glossing it over. Like,
I don't gloss it over.
Oh, you know, talking about the Lord with them or whatever. You know, it's they really don't care. You know, it is difficult with your own kids. Yeah, I know.
It is. And there's a certain strategy, too, you know, because they know who I am and what I've done in my life. You know, I'm Matt Slick, the apologist. That's not to sound boastful, but the poor kids grew up with this. So, you know, it's a little bit different. I have to be very, very careful what I say. And so I hope and I pray that others will say the things that I would say to them, and they'll listen to them, and that's okay.
Yeah.
So when they come over, I just show them
the
Christian
church
love.
Is...
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And do you think the church overall is there any church discipline anymore? I mean, with mega churches?
I don't know about mega churches, but there's church discipline. Yes, it still occurs. Usually in Reformed churches.
Okay. Yeah. It seems like it's really overall, like, kind of lacking, at least from my observations, you know?
Well, you know, whenever I hear someone like you talk about this on the radio, it always makes me want to start a church to do it right. you know, like I could do it right, you know, that God will slap me down for that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it's just, come on. We're gonna, you know, why don't they do that? Why don't they go exegetically, verse by verse, stick with the scriptures, do historical redemptive preaching, mm-hmm. talk about Christ, get rid of moralism, abandon women pastors mm-hmm. and elders. Not, homosexuality is not an alternative lifestyle. This is what the Word of God says. You know, teaching the truth of the gospel and heavy doctrine as well as light doctrine. You know, and forget, what gets me? When I go to a church and the first 10 minutes of a sermon is an illustration story. Oh, I just want to get a straw with a spit wad. You know?
Yeah, we want the meat of the word, right?
Yeah, give me the word. Don't give me some stinking story.
Exactly. About themselves, usually, right?
Yeah, about themselves, some experience. Okay. You know, it's like, come on. Yeah. The Word of God isn't powerful enough. You got to start off with a story to prep people to understand the Word. You're not doing your job. Okay, I'm whining now.
Exactly.
So, you know, I'm a whiner.
Okay, well, hey, thanks so much. Okay. That was great.
You're welcome,
okay,
Christine.
God bless.
You too. God bless. All right, let's jump right on the phone to Richard from Richmond, whom we lost, and let's get over to, I use my man voice here, Jeff from Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Jeff, welcome. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Doing all right, by God's grace.
I was listening to you earlier in reference to socialism, and I'm embarrassed to say that I'm not as informed and educated as I should be in reference to the democratic ways of these days. I certainly understand why the F student would be supportive of that program. I somewhat question why the C student would be, but I'm curious why the A student would vote for that. And in reference
to... Oh, I'll tell you why.
I'm really curious about that.
I'll tell you why people vote for socialism. It's really simple. They're uneducated. They don't know what it means to work real hard and be rewarded for what they want. They're covetous, and they want the rich to pay what they have to have. They want what they have. They want a redistribution. They're brainwashed by the media.
That's what I'm talking about. Right. But my question is, the smart ones, I have friends that are very intelligent. They are very successful. Mm-hmm. And because they dislike an individual so much,
like Trump,
they're willing to vote the other way. And that's what's scary to me, is mm-hmm. that they have seen the failures, especially of Venezuela, as the example mm-hmm. you use. What I'm scared to death of is I've got some very intelligent people who are voting the wrong way. And I'm scared to death that.
Well, let's talk about that when the break's over.
Understand.
Let's talk about it when the break's over, because what they're doing is blinding themselves by hatred. We'll get to that in a minute. Folks, we'll be right back after these messages. We have two open lines, 877-207-2276. Be right back.
Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Let's get back to Jeff from Richmond, Virginia. You still there?
Yes, sir.
All right, so intelligent people will make stupid choices. Intelligent people generally have good motives and good reasons for wanting this kind of a thing. Generally, the concepts that socialism espouses are such things as fairness to people, the reduction of poverty, the distribution of wealth and power in a more equal fashion, the development of equality in the ability to educate. The idea of socialism is good in that it wants to, and generally the people within it, want to see the betterment of more people. That's the idea. The failure of socialism is, it's based on the idea that people are basically good, and that's just wrong. People are not basically good, they're basically evil in their hearts. And that's not to say that each person is super evil, it's just that we are by nature selfish. We're not very altruistic. We have to learn how to be giving. We have to learn how to be altruistic. And it's not exactly easy. And so the problem is...
Go ahead. What I was curious about, I understand what you're saying in reference to giving, because with a baby, with a child, mm-hmm. you don't have to teach them to tell a lie. Did you eat that cookie? No. You know doggone well he ate the cookie, right. But he knew to tell a lie right off, right. And you have to teach him to tell the truth. I get that. But the other part of the question that I had is the size of the country of Venezuela and the lack of numbers involved in the democratic way of doing things. Is it safe to say that even though it's proven to be a bad thing for the masses, is it possible that that would work in reference to the number of people that we have involved in the process to keep it from getting so out of hand?
No. We already see the abuse of power within our government. We already see that when bureaucracy gets involved, efficiency decreases. We see this.
Okay.
This is in our own government. The nationalized healthcare thing is a joke.
That was on one side, though, wasn't it?
Here's how it needs to work. If I were president and had the ability to do all this stuff, could you imagine President Slick? Oh, man. But what I would urge for, I think it needs to be urged for example, in healthcare, is to privatize all of it and to open the borders up between the states as much as possible and let private companies work and compete with each other. Competition causes the improvement of a service, the perfecting of the service, the more efficiency of a service. And so when people are competing with each other, they will work very, very hard to secure their own futures because they want to produce something that the population is going to want. And if the people were allowed to do what they need to do without government regulations saying what they have to do. Now, we don't want abuse, of course, and certainly the government does need to come in and break up monopolies and abuse of power away. And I get that. And that's one of the jobs of the government. So it needs to be in there to protect people from the abuse of power, which can occur in the private sector as well as the governmental sector, which is why we have a constitution, we have the Bill of Rights. In a socialist government, though, there is no real Bill of Rights because the socialist government can change them. The socialist government can say that the social structure is what decides what is true. And, for example, Christianity. It's on the way out. It's persecuted. Christians are persecuted. In a republic, we have certain inalienable rights. The freedom of religion, for example, in the First Amendment. But in a socialistic system, that can be suspended. It doesn't really matter. The Bill of Rights is not an issue. What is an issue is what the majority want. If the majority want Christians to be imprisoned, then that there's nothing stopping them from passing laws for that. That's what socialism potentially is. Not saying it would go that bad, but that's basically what it is.
Yes, sir.
In fact, that's what Germany was working in, was that principle of socialistic idea. And they had to have scapegoats and things like this. People have no idea how bad socialism is. And the reason they don't is because...
Well, that's scary, right.
Yes, the leftist media does not do its homework. It's not in for truth. It's into agenda. They want a revolution to occur in America. It may happen, but not the way they want. There are a lot of people.
Well, the scary part is they get to report on all the ridiculousness, and that's what's scary. Is too many people don't understand that.
Right, and so what I tell people is do your own homework. I have an app, but I've recommended twice before. It's called Conservative News Pro. It's an app on my phone. I have an Android, Conservative News Pro, and it lists 10 or 15, I don't know, conservative news sources. And you can go through, and I compare stuff. And I also recommend that people go to, I have a whole news folder, the Epoch Times. But I also recommend go to USA Today and look at CNN. And see what the left is saying. and compare.
Yeah.
And just
well,
do
that's
comparison.
What I do. I like to listen to all sides and then make the decision myself. Yeah. Not many people do that.
Let me tell you a story.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. I listen to you. I'm getting a scratchy signal, but I listen to you on the radio. Thank you so much.
All right, ma'am. God bless.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, before we get to the next caller, I remembered a story from seminary. This is very, very important that this is true. A friend of mine in seminary who was from South Africa, this is back when I graduated in 91, he was watching the apartheid news because he's interested in it because he's from South Africa. He flew into San Diego and he was there for a few years to do his Master's of Divinity. And we became friends. He came to school one day and he was absolutely astounded by what happened. He was watching the news and there were riots about apartheid. And he's looking on the news and he recognized his street. He recognized the houses and the street that he lived on where his brother was. He recognized it. Oh, my goodness, my brother's in trouble. He immediately got on the phone and called his brother. And he said, are you okay? And his brother said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, the riots, I'm watching them happen right now. And he says, there's nothing happening. He said, look out your window. And he says, he looks out the window, he goes, there's nothing happening, there's nobody out there. And my friend said, he was watching the news. He said it was live. And that there was live riots right there. And he talked to his brother, who's right there, who said, nothing's happening. And he did say, his brother said, 2 months ago there was a mini riot, he said, about a different thing. They were using that news and that clip in order to create false news, false information, and it was being presented. This is what he told me. He said he saw it and he verified it with his own brother. I never forgot that. Don't trust the media, folks. Don't trust when one group is in control. You can't trust their integrity and their honesty. You can't unless it's Jesus Christ. Okay, this is why the Constitution has a division of powers. We ought to have that division of powers in place. All right, we can talk about some other time what those are and why. Anyway, I study everything. Let's get on the phone with Brent from Iowa. Brent, welcome to the show. We lost him. He's on 1 Peter 3:21, which I would love to have spoken about. Let's get to Courtney from Ohio. Courtney, welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, that was really interesting. That was not what my question had to be about, but...
Wow. I got more stories.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can take some more time. You need more than an hour. I'm sorry. You need to, at least.
I've resisted talking about politics because it offends people. But I'm just realizing that we need truth in the world. We don't need convenience.
Oh, it needs to be talked about. Yeah,
it needs to be talked
about.
And Christians need to talk about it. We can talk about communism. We can talk about oligarchies. We can talk about all kinds of stuff. Capitalism, what it is, dictatorship, and how things usually decay. Well, I could even read there's so much information. I could even read the early constitutions of the United States the 13 states, and they required that the legislators, that the elected officials, be Christians in good standing in a church.
I remember hearing that. I think I learned that from David Bart.
Yeah, they could not hold office because they realized. See, here's the thing about someone like Hillary and someone like Obama. I don't know if Trump's a Christian or not. I know someone who knows him or knew him and said he was a Christian, so I'll leave that there. But for those who claim to be Christians and really aren't, what are they going to do? When they get in power, are they going to want to honor God? No. They're going to serve something
else. Probably not.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, we'll be right back. Okay, we've got a break coming up. Folks, we'll be right back after these messages. Give me a call. We have two open lines, 877-207-2276. Be right back.
It's Matt Slick Live, taking your calls at 877-207-2276. Here's Matt Slick.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the show. Let's get to Courtney from Ohio. Courtney, there you go.
Hey. Okay, so I called yesterday, but it was like a minute left, and I asked you about, I never heard in my life about Junia, how people try to use that as a reason for women in ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it because we're trying to find a church. So, but before mm-hmm. I go somewhere, I want to scope it out.
Good.
So I was reading the statement of belief for there's an Assembly of God church like right around mm-hmm. the corner from our house. And so I was like, okay, so I'm reading this, and I read this about Junia. I'm like, I've never heard this in my life. And so I started asking you about that yesterday. And then something else that I came across in their statement of belief that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and I wanted to hear your thoughts on it. Do you care if I read it? It's just a couple paragraphs. Is that okay?
Well, first of all, you want to say something about Junia? Or is this about?
Well, yeah.
Junior?
I mean, you didn't get to finish. Yeah, you didn't really say much yesterday about that because there was a minute left. And
Junia
is. You started saying a little bit about be careful about the Assemblies of God. So
yeah, I would not recommend the Assemblies of God. They teach you can lose your salvation, and they support women pastors and elders. And if you can lose your salvation, then the question then becomes, what do you have to do to keep it? This is the question you have to ask. If they say, here's the rules you got to do to keep it, then you're a cult. Because we don't do anything to keep our salvation.
Yeah.
It's not to say that, I should say they're cultic. That's not to say they're not Christian.
Uh-huh.
Because they, you know, people can be saved in varying degrees of ignorance, and people are ignorant, and I am too, of many things. But when you have a denomination that says that you can lose your salvation, the question you have to ask is, what do you do to keep it? If they say, well, you can't go to movies, hypothetically, you can't watch R-rated movies, you have to wear dresses, whatever it might be, a list of things. You say, well, if I do those things, then
I didn't know they said that.
Well, no, I'm saying if they do, okay, those moral things. But they do teach you can lose your salvation. So then you have to ask.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I didn't know that Assembly of God taught that. I didn't know that.
Yes,
okay.
Which is problematic because you have to find out what it is that they teach. And then sometimes within some groups that teach you can lose your salvation, there becomes a... an uppity group in that you're not. Oh, you're going to see movies? You're wearing pants as a woman? Not that I'm saying that the AG would do that, but I'm just saying this kind of a thing can happen. So we've got to be very careful of that, and it's just something to look into. But also, they definitely teach women who could be pastors and elders, and they do use Junia as an excuse for that. But they fail to.
I read
recognize.
Your article.
Okay, good. So you know then it's not. They shouldn't do that. There's different kind of apostles.
Yeah.
And Junia is referenced as a male by Origen and Epiphanes and others. In fact, in Romans 16:7, it says, greet Andronicus and Junius, my kinsmen. And the word kinsmen there, the word kinsmen, is in the masculine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's saying that they is the same masculine. So, you know, I wish the AG would call me up and go, Matt, we're tired of you saying this on the radio. We're going to debate you on women pastors. I'd say, please, when are we going to debate? I would love that.
Well, now let me ask you about this other thing that bothered me as I was reading their statement. I just want to hear your comment on it.
Sure.
Okay, so it says, the statement that man is the head of the woman has for centuries been used to justify the practice of male superiority and to exclude women from spiritual leadership. Two alternative translations for kephale, which is head, debated widely by contemporary evangelical scholars, are authority over and source or origin. Both meanings are found in literature of false times. This is the next paragraph that I really want you to hone in on. Taking the passage as a whole, the second meaning fits as well as or better than the first meaning, leading to the summary statement of verse 12. As women came from man, so also man is born of woman, but everything comes from God. Even the relationship between the eternal Son and the Father, the head of Christ is God, fits better as source than authority over. And then they reference John 8:42. Without attempting to definitely to resolve this debate, we do not find sufficient evidence and can fail to deny leadership women's role to women, blah, 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 blah. I just didn't like either how they said that God is the head of Christ. Like, I know they're both God.
He is the heart. He is the head of Christ.
That's what I thought. So, and they're saying there, oh no, that it's better to put as source than authority over. So, I mean, was God, God's not Christ.
Well, that's problematic.
Source. They're both God, right?
Right. because you can't have God the Father be the source of the Son. And talk about the eternal generation of the Son. It's a debated doctrine within Christianity. Because what does it mean that the Son is eternally generated from the Father? Well, eternally generated means that he proceeds from the Father. And it does seem to say that in Scripture to some degree. But we still don't know exactly what that means. There are discussions about it theologically. If I were in a debate with someone from the AG, and they were to bring that up, I'd say, can you tell me exactly what that actually means? And they wouldn't be able to, because no one really knows. We can come up with theories. But the issue here is that what they're doing is they are abusing the Word of God, and that they are clearly rejecting the Word, which says that the pastor is an elder, 1 Timothy 5:17. And in 1 Timothy 3:2 and Titus 1:5-7, the elder is to be aner mias gunaikas, a man of one woman. It specifically says.
Yeah, you know what?
This.
They don't mention any of those scriptures in this entire article.
I know. They don't.
So, but I just wanted to make it clear when I read that part too. Christ isn't the source of. The God's not his source, they're both God. Like, I can understand when he walked on earth as a man, you know, he prayed to God, and but as far as being a source, they're both God, and I don't have a problem with God the Father. I mean, God the Father is Father and he's Son, so of course he would have authority over.
Right, because he was made.
God the Father would have authority over their Son.
Because he was made under the law, Galatians 4:4, made for a little while lower than the angels, Hebrews 2:9. And as being under the law, Jesus had to have someone that he would call God, and so he would do that. John 17 is the manifestation of that, among other verses and stuff. The AG, I recommend people stay away from because of these issues.
Okay.
And in my research... In my research, 80% of the denominations that affirm women pastors, 80% within... two generations start affirming homosexuality.
Not good.
Not good.
So
yeah, I challenge the AG.
Challenge
publicly. I challenge them to a debate on this issue of women pastors. I challenge them.
Well, I would listen to that.
Yeah, they won't.
But
they won't.
I want to know. Well, are there any denominations or churches that you do promote? Because we are having a hard time finding a church. I'm being honest. I try to check first before I go somewhere.
Well, generally speaking, Reformed churches, Calvinist churches, are better. Generally speaking, but not always. If a denomination has the word "united" in it, it's bad for some weird reason. But United Reformed is good. Now, Calvary Chapel is not Reformed, and I go to Calvary Chapel. And so some Calvary chapels are good, and some are gooder. And so it's a good, safe place to be. And they don't affirm women pastors and elders. They don't affirm homosexuality. Of course, they don't affirm Reformed theology. But you know what? That's okay. That's not a deal breaker for me. And so just do what you got to. Oh, and also, there's an article on CARM, what to look for in a church. And you can go there. You can check it out. And one of the things you got to ask, people don't think about asking this, do you have any unbelievers on your worship team? Because I used to go, I knew a church in San Diego that had an unbeliever who was being paid to be on the in the worship team in order to lead worship of the believers towards the infinitely holy God of the universe. And they said, we're trying to witness to him by having him do this. And I'm like,
oh, boy.
Heretics?
No, it sounds to me like you're just trying to get more members and just do things to keep them there.
Maybe. See, if I started a church, there wouldn't be very many people in it. There wouldn't be.
Oh, boy.
You know, I'm just preaching it. That's what it says. You don't like it, there's the exit. You know? So, anyway. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Okay. God bless, Courtney. God bless.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. All right. All right. Let's get on the phones with Andrew from Georgia. Andrew, welcome. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. How you doing?
Doing all right, man. What do you got, buddy?
So I had a question that was political, okay?
Okay. Good.
So I got to listening. I'm not going to lie. I'm new to your station. I was driving from North Carolina to Georgia going home. Mm-hmm. And it honestly might have been a sign from God, my friend, because I've been having questions for ages, and I never really know who to ask.
Okay.
So maybe it was a reason that I started listening to your channel and called you.
Okay.
But I'd like to actually change my question, honestly.
That's fine.
So I grew up religious. My mother and my father are devout Christians.
Okay.
They're great people, but as I went through life, I started to have a very bitter, bitter emotional response to religion.
Okay.
I think mainly one, because my mother and my father are in a very different kind of relationship. Mm. I think you'd probably define it as cultic, because I was listening. Okay. So, I mean, dresses, hair in a bun,
yeah,
kind of similar to apostolic. Kind of.
Is it you?
But,
does it?
Well,
does the word "United Apostolic" ring a bell?
It technically doesn't have a name. That's
why
it's different. It doesn't have. They say they don't have a name, but it's very. Okay. It's a very different, strange kind of religion.
All right.
But
so, what's
my
your question?
Biggest thing is,
because we're getting low on time. That's what I'm telling you. Sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
My question is, out of all history and all the things that I've seen in religion, I'm afraid, because I see so many churches making money hand over fist over people, and I don't want to support that. And I do want to have my own relationship with Lord, because I have a son now, and I feel that that's important for him. But my thing how do I go about finding the right church?
What I would do is go to my website, CARM. You ever heard of CARM.org? CARM.org?
No.
Go check it out.
CARM, okay.
CARM. Been working on it for almost 25 years, okay? And go look up the article, What to Look For in a Church. And you can also email me, if you want, give me your cell number, and I'll call you sometime, and we can just blab. And we can talk about it.
Absolutely. I would love that. I really do need some help. I think it's important in my life. I just don't know who to turn to, honestly.
Well, I'll tell you what. You don't know who I am, but my last name is Slick, for real. Reverend Slick.
Okay.
But you can trust me, okay? And you can laugh and mock my name. I get a kick out of it. But I'm very straightforward, okay? I'll just tell it to you like it is.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing, and I'm the same way.
Well, good. So, go to CARM.org, and you can email me, because it's at the bottom of the email at the website, and just say, hey, I'm so-and-so, called your show, here's my cell, give me a call sometime, and we'll do it, okay? We'll call back tomorrow, too.
Sounds great. I'll email you later.
All right, buddy. God bless, man. Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Bye. Okay. There's the music. Hey, Richard from Richmond. Oh, I want to talk about the assemblies, God's Assembly of Churches. That's interesting, whatever that is. Call back tomorrow. Let's talk. Hey, folks, hope you enjoyed the show. May the Lord bless you, and by His grace, we'll be back on air tomorrow. We'll talk to you then. See you, bye.